Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, we ended last week on a sort of a cliffhanger. There was a bet made.
Mm-hmm.
People went to the movies last weekend. Some people didn't. Those who went to the movies went to one movie over another movie. Why don't you fill our audience in on the bet?
I believe the bet was that King Arthur, you bet me that King Arthur would defeat Snatched at the box office. I was, for once, absolutely pretty darn sure that I would win that bet, so I took it, and I believe the wager was a bottle of wine, but gee, Charlie, I don't see anything
here. Well, let me begin my excuses about why you do not see a bottle of wine. We're recording on a Wednesday, and I don't feel like drinking a bottle of wine on a Wednesday. And it's 92,000 degrees outside.
Yeah, but it was a bet, and I won.
This is not our last episode. I think you'll see a bottle of wine at the next one.
Okay. So, unless there's another wager to be found between now and then.
Both films, King Arthur and Snatched, underperformed. Not so much Snatched. It did underperform, not overwhelmingly, like King Arthur did. King Arthur cost $150 million to make. Add another $100 million on top of that for marketing, and it rolled in with about $14 to $16 million, and it lost to Snatch by $1.8 million.
I believe that's called a total box office dud.
And it's not fair. It's not horrible. I digress.
You do digress because I think, as I predicted, the buzz on Snatched was still slightly better than the lack of any buzz on King Arthur.
Well, tonight is sort of an abbreviated episode. We only have two films we're going to talk about. One is a young adult adaptation, Everything, Everything. And I don't even know what to classify the next one. A travelogue commercial starring Diane Lane called Paris Can Wait.
Comedy, drama, romance.
Sure it is.
Yeah, for mature audiences.
First off, no, we did not review Alien Covenant, because it was in Georgetown, people. Right. In Georgetown, don't you understand?
It has to be an amazing movie. It's for me to drag myself to Georgetown. And I don't even honestly remember seeing the first Alien. I think I did, but not enough to.
Well, you're missing Alien,
really
Aliens, yeah. Alien 3, Alien Resurrection, and Prometheus.
Exactly. So I was already so far behind the eight ball on this one that Georgetown was just the final excuse.
Well, and I'm bummed I missed it because I saw Prometheus, and just like everyone else, I was confused by it, didn't understand it. So I was hoping Alien Covenant could explain something, anything.
Is hoping a new word?
Hoping. It's an alternative word, Hannah.
That's right.
We also did not review Diary of a Wimpy Kid 2, because, man, that just looks bad. I couldn't do that to myself.
I think I did see the first Diary of a Wimpy Kid, but the fact that I don't remember whether or not for sure I saw it is enough to make me realize that it's one that, you know, I think the 9-year-olds are very anxious to see, maybe 8 to 12, maybe.
I have no idea. But I know that Alicia Silverstone's in it, and that's what almost made me go, because I wanted to see a nice grown-up, mature Alicia Silverstone.
Yes, but I think this one is targeted for that tween audience, and those are the ones who've read the books and are going to see it.
Hannah, we live in an era of the young adult novel adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
If you have cancer, have some Fault in Our Stars. If you have unrequited love with a girl across the street, here's some Paper Towns. There's also Time Loops and Before I Fall and Comas and If I Stay.
And don't forget the vampires and Twilight.
I'll give you Twilight. I'll give you the Divergent franchise. Yeah. Here's another one based on the debut novel by one Nicola Yoon. Everything, Everything. It's a terrible title unless you see the film where you quickly kind of understand where it's coming from. Otherwise, it's a ridiculous title. She doesn't have cancer. She's not really dying. Kind of.
Hey.
I don't know. She has
skid.
Super combined immunodeficiency. She's fine. It's a Seinfeld episode. It's a boy in a bubble. The Bubble Boy.
It's the boy in the plastic bubble, which is not a Seinfeld episode.
It is a Seinfeld episode.
It is a 1976 television movie it's an iconic TV movie that starred John Travolta. And so anybody who was alert and alive enough.
I was the opposite of alert in 1976.
I know, but I do remember seeing The Boy in the Plastic Bubble. I do remember crying my eyes out. And so that's sort of what I was expecting, was that everything would be the girl in the plastic bubble updated.
She's a girl in a very plush, postmodern science house.
Yeah.
Hermetically sealed, all the accoutrements if you have to live life indoors. She's doing okay. She's getting along. She's lonely. She just turned 18. And ooh la la, boy moves in next door. It doesn't matter if he's cute or not. She'll take what she can get.
Oh, come on. No. It's because he's cute. He is cute. And he was very appealing. He reminded me, I mentioned, of the guy in Fault in Our Stars. So there's that sort of...
You're saying Nick Robinson looks like Ansel Elgort.
Nick Robinson looks like Ansel Elgort in this movie. He's got that same sort of appeal. But this movie, it's just...
I don't buy him, but I want to stay on him. I don't buy him.
There's no real chemistry. Well, how can you have chemistry when one's outside, one's inside, and, you know, all that stuff?
That's more biology.
It's more biology. But, you know, it has some sweet moments here and there, but ultimately it amounts to nothing.
So it's a nice one, by the way. It's directed by a second-time feature director named Stella McGee. Her first film went to a festival or two, never got a wide release. No one saw it. So this one is her first real theater-wide distribution. Maddie Whittier. Maddie is played by Amandla Stenberg. You don't know you know her, but you do. She was little Rue in the first Hunger Games. Oh, Rue, she's back.
She's all grown up.
She's 18.
2012 to 2017. So
about 5 years old.
5 years. Yeah, it's a big five years at that age for growing.
And she's, you know, she keeps busy. She's a good reader. She writes reviews of the book. She's a budding architect. She makes really quirky models. And he is Nick Robinson. You might remember him as the older boy, kind of the snot in Jurassic World, one of those boys.
He was the unrequited love, wasn't he, in Fifth Wave? He was that kid, Ben.
there was
that other boy.
There's always the other boy.
Yeah, I think he was the one that that was pining after the girl and was sort of rejected until he wasn't.
Well, his name's Ollie, and Ollie wears all black. His favorite book is Lord of the Flies, and he wants to act like this misanthrope that he isn't really. And he has Anakin Skywalker syndrome, the dialogue. You remember back in, like, Star Wars, he's like, I don't like the sand. The very, very famous scene. Here he says, I respect the ocean. It's impersonal and murderous. All right.
Yeah.
It didn't lose me there, but it did it ended up losing me. Everything lost me. I was on board, and it lost me when Fonz jumped the shark. It jumped, like, it couldn't, it had to do something. Something happens. I'm not going to tell you anything about it, but it jumps the shark. It's ridiculous. It loses the audience.
Yeah, but it jumps the shark 90 minutes in. So just when it's
way back there.
Just when you have the spike of drama and consequence and something and stakes are raised in this movie, it's over. And so you go through a big chunk of it. I liked the first 10 minutes. I thought, oh, this is going to be a sap fest, which I tend to like. And I did think it was going to be very Fault in Our Stars-ish, which in some ways it was. But Fault in Our Stars just was so much better because it had more drama throughout and was a better adaptation, I think, of the book. And so I just got more and more disappointed as it went on. And then the final twist just it was too little too late, and then it just didn't carry through, and they didn't do much with it.
They didn't wrap it up, no, and they left a big, just gaping wide plot hole. I did not feel the chemistry between these two. One thing I did like, though, they text back and forth a lot. They have no choice. They can talk on the phone, they text, and we've seen scrolling text on the screen before. That is nothing new. But to get around just the aggravation of reading scrolling text, because they have long conversations that way, Stella McGee puts them, hypothetically, inside one of her models. They're in a diner, and they sit across from a booth from one another. They're not really there. but they're talking in text and we see them next door, and that works. All right, that worked for me. I was all right with that.
It was okay. I wasn't sure. There was a brief period of time there. I'm like, okay, what's imagination and what's real? And even when they kind of get together and go off together, there's a point later on where you go, did what we just see really happen or did it not really happen? And so it worked on some levels, but could be a little confusing, I think, for some folks seeing this. And I agree, the chemistry wasn't good enough. And there were, I found plot holes with things like, you know, I'm sorry, but if you have this severe immune system disease, you really should not get on a crowded flight in coach. It's like a germ factory. So you go from like 0 to 100. And that to me was, she takes risks with her illness. And that just seems like that's a bit too much of a risk for somebody, and too much of a risk for the guy who loves her to be okay with taking that risk.
No, that's a good point about the risk. I was going to bring that up. I think teenagers might like this. And anyone else, like those of us who are 30-somethings with toddlers and other elders, we see life is finite and we understand mortality. Teenagers are never going to die. Therefore, if they have SCID, they're like, I'll go out and go to the mall, you know, whatever. I'll go on a plane and go to Hawaii. I'm a teenager and I'm going to live forever.
And I'm going to jump off a cliff. And, you know, so people who had issues with, I believe it was in Twilight at one point, there's a scene where like Bella jumps off the cliff going after Edward. And there's a similar kind of thing that goes on here. And anyone with any sense would go, no, wouldn't do that right now in your state of mind. Plus, I still don't understand. She tries on this really tiny, this bathing suit that's really ill-fitting.
That was weird, yeah.
And it was strange. I was like, wow. So then I thought she would change out of it and maybe get a different bathing suit once everyone acknowledged that this was a very ill-fitting bathing suit. But no, she goes into the ocean wearing it, so there were just little things like that that just kind of were dead in the water for me.
It is dead in the water. There's nothing to see here. I liked your pun. Everything is nothing, nothing. There's just nothing here. Avoid this thing.
Unless you are a teenager, perhaps, who read the book.
And then you'll just stream it on your phone or something.
And or maybe if you liked Space Between Us, which was not very good.
Terrible.
Exactly. So if you like Space Between Us, you might actually like this one too. And I put this one, again, way below Fault in Our Stars, but slightly above Space Between Us.
I haven't liked any of them except Paper Towns, which was, I'll put that one a little bit higher.
Okay.
All right, next film is Paris Can Wait. Paris Can Wait feels like a Woody Allen film. I thought for a while, if I didn't know who it was, I thought it'd be a Woody Allen film. Because it's a love letter to southern France. It could be produced by the French Ministry of Tourism, but it's not. It's from Eleanor Coppola. Eleanor Coppola is Francis Ford's wife. She's 81 years old, and this is her first feature film. It does not break the record for oldest person to direct a film. That's a 90-year-old Japanese man who owns that record. But dude, 81 directing
his
first film.
But his name wasn't Coppola, so you know.
So good on her for doing it. Yeah. Apparently, it's based on a true story. She did make that drive from Cannes to Paris with a business associate of Francis, and it took much longer than 7 hours it should have taken. It took 40 hours, and she said when she got back home to California, this would make a good film. No, it doesn't, actually. It does not make a good film. What do you think about that?
I liked Diane Lane, so she's really good. It was a good opportunity to really have something where she's the true star of this movie. It dragged. It's, you know, it's a 9-hour road trip that gets broken up by a lot of food porn. There is more food and wine in this movie. Do not go hungry going into this movie. But I did like watching Diane Lane in something other than, you know, we've seen her so much lately as just Martha Kent in the Superman movies. And so, you know, I think her performance is good. I think her performance, all the performances are better than the movie itself was.
It reminds me of whatever this comparison everyone's going to make, Under the Tuscan Sun. Mm-hmm. She's just hanging out in Tuscany, you know, just bumming around. Now she's bumming around in South France. She plays Anne, an American who kind of sticks out, and her chauffeur is Arnaud Villard, and he is Jacques. It is no surprise to us, he's coming on strong. He's got
He's French.
Designs. And that's what everyone says. Her husband, her real, in the movie, Michael, her husband of jet-setting movie producer is Alec Baldwin. And Alec Baldwin, you can see he's not comfortable with this arrangement. He does not want Jacques and Anne to hang out in the car for so long because he knows Jacques's going to be up to something. And he keeps reminding his wife over the phone, honey, he's French. So I guess that means everyone expects the Frenchman to try to commit adultery.
Well, I mean, you read
so many
stories. I thought
that was the Italians,
stories.
By the
no,
way.
No, no, no. The French all have mistresses. No, that is a French thing, that the French, you know, a lot of the French men have mistresses, and they have the wife that they are most committed to, and then they have the girl on the side. And so, but you talked about Alec Baldwin. The fact that Alec Baldwin has top billing in this film.
He doesn't. Diane Lane has top
billing. No, but Diane Lane, but Alec Baldwin and Diane Lane. So it's Diane Lane and Alec Baldwin. Alec Baldwin's in this movie for like 15 minutes. So it's a little bit of false advertising because the true co-star of this film is Arnaud Viard, who I'd never seen or heard of before, but a French actor who plays Jacques. And it's the relationship between the two of them as they as they're on this road trip together that really is the heart of the movie. And so maybe it would have been better if we'd seen more of Alec Baldwin because, you know, he's on a roll right now.
Well,
and I think people were hoping to see more of him.
Baldwin's character, Michael, is just a stock character. He's the busy executive he doesn't have time for his wife. They're at the Cannes Film Festival. She's obviously struggling and he's like, hey, I need to go. And she's tagging along. It's kind of a second wheel in their marriage. So she's more than happy to ditch him. Jacques is probably the most interesting character. He's a glutton. He's hedonistic. If he sees a butterfly in his Peugeot, he'll probably pull off the road to go chase it. He loves his food, ice cream, his haute cuisine. I mean, there are €1,000 dinners. Ice cream, Roman architecture. He's full of French facts about the region of Provence and living cheese. He loves his living cheese and bottles
cheese.
Of wine. And there's the movie's wants to make you suspicious. It's tricking you. Jacques has ways of not paying for things, and you wonder, all right, I know you know how to talk to women. You're a smooth talker. You're an operator.
Yeah.
You seem trustworthy, Jacques, but then when the bill comes, okay, I'm gonna pick on you a little bit. I'm gonna unravel you for a little bit. So Eleanor Coppola is setting us up a little bit there.
Yeah, I wasn't sure which direction it would go on because you're alternately sympathetic towards Jacques, and then you're very suspicious of him, and then you're just sort of wondering if he's playing her, and then it's sort of like, okay, is she playing him a little bit now? And there's definitely a flirtation going on throughout, and he's trying to get her to just sort of loosen up and embrace the, you know, take the time and enjoy the trip, enjoy the journey of getting from Cannes to Paris. And yeah, I think it's about 9 hours, the drive.
The lady protests, but not too much.
You know, yes, exactly. Just a bit. And then she protests and then not quite. And then she's enjoying herself. And so it reminded me a bit of like those Before Midnight movies. And it's really just focused on these two characters what actually amounted to a rather long-feeling 90-some minutes.
It did feel a lot longer than an hour and
mm-hmm.
a half.
Yeah.
You called it a comedy, drama, romance. No, there's no conflict in here. It's a travelogue. It's like one of those Steve Coogan, Rob Bryson, The Trip films where they just talk over meals. And most of this takes place over tabletops and then just her taking pictures of food. There's no conflict. There's no plot. Like, in the background, yeah, you know he's trying to get her in bed, but it's frivolous. It's nothing.
Yeah, both movies this week just suffered from that same basic core problem, which was there was very little actual drama going on. And so it just both kind of felt both dragged and both just didn't ever really take the turns that would that you've just come to expect, that you hope for in a good film. So while I like Diane Lane's performance, I liked Jacques and Alec Baldwin for all of his 15 minutes is good. It just, the movie as a whole just, you know, kind of just is there.
That's a good way to put it. It's there. All right, quick wrap up on a quick episode. Everything Everything, another installment in the young adult genre we are experiencing here in the mid-2010s. And it's right there on the bottom with the rest of them.
Yeah, I'm trying to make a real effort. John Armstrong told me I used the words nice and it was fine too often. So I am completely staying away from that this week and just saying that Everything Everything is just not very good.
It's unfine.
It's unfine. Again, it's just, it amounts to nothing. It's got some, the premise, given the premise and the fact that I did not well up once, which is huge. When you see this kind of movie, you expect to at least at some point get teary and emotional. That did not happen.
Speak for yourself.
Were you crying?
No. Paris Can Wait. It will keep you waiting because nothing happens for 92 minutes. It's pretty to look at. Diane Lane's pretty good-looking 52-year-old.
She looks great.
There's nothing here.
Yeah, I mean, she looks great, and the food looks amazing, and the wine looks good. Maybe I'll find out sometime when I get my bet paid off. And, it works if you want to see some French countryside scenery and some really good food, but it's certainly one of those ones that you can wait and rent it if that.
Well, let us know if we did a terrible thing by not watching Alien Covenant and Diary of a Wimpy Kid 2. But if you lived where we lived, you would understand. You wouldn't go to Georgetown either.
That's right.
All right. On behalf of the Cinema Clash, I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.